This is an interview with Robert Alexander Anderson and his wife, Margaret Leith, Center Anderson. Andy attended Punahou School from 1900 to 1912 and was a member of the Outrigger Canoe Club as a youngster. Peggy attended Punahou from 1904 to 1911. This interview is being conducted on April 10th, 1981, at the home of Ken Pratt, 4817 Alki Avenue. The interviewer is Ken Pratt, representing the Outrigger Canoe Club Oral History Committee. Now, Andy, to start off with, we'd like to hear about your early recollections at the Outrigger Canoe Club and Waikiki Beach in general.
Yes, Ken, I relate my trying to think back now as to time. The club was established in 1908.
That's right.
And it must have been just about that time and sort of with the forming that I have a recollection of Alexander Hume Ford out in what we called Cornucopia Surf. Coming in contact with him there, I was trying to learn to surf. You see, by this time I would be, well, I was 14. And I'd started, they had these thin little boards in those days for the kids, and we catch the waves in Cornucopia Surf.
That's where I learned to surf.
Yeah. And I have a recollection that somebody said that I should be a student member of the new club, and I believe I was so enrolled.
Great.
I don't know how long. I guess that lasted until I went to college, which was 1912.
I see.
And after that, I didn't come back from college. World War One, and 4 years in Chicago and a year in Pittsburgh. Didn't get back to live here till 1923. That's when Peggy and I, having been married in Chicago, came home to Honolulu to make our home. So that's my early recollection. And I've suddenly got a frog in the throat here.
Peggy, now I understand you lived out not too far from the present Outrigger Canoe Club. You must have been on the beach a great deal. What are your recollections?
Just that it was a beautiful beach, and I loved to swim, and I swam there. My mother's home was nearby. And finally, as a young girl, Louise Dillingham gave a beautiful party and asked me to come to it. And she said, I want you to meet the great Madame Melba. And she said, she's here during the war on her way back to Australia. And she said, I'm going to have a dinner party for her and up at my home, and I want you to meet Frank St. Ledger. So I went to the party, and Melba said to me, I hear you sing. I said, I play the ukulele, and I performed with local people and things, and I enjoy it very much. And she said, well, I'm going back to Australia, and I'd like to take you back with me.
Yeah, that's great.
So I went to Australia, and I spent, during the war, 3 years there. And when I came back, I went to the Outrigger and sang and played for everybody and had a wonderful time. And you came back from the war, you remember?
Yeah.
You had been taken prisoner by the Germans, shot down, and we met, played and sang together and had fun. And then we fell in love, and you went out of Chicago, and I followed my way. I was on my way to Europe, and you and I were married in Chicago. Do you remember?
When we went back.
Fantastic.
1919,
November 14th. And we went back, came back to Honolulu,
4 years in Chicago, came back in 1923.
Yeah. Ah, yes. Who were you working for back
in Chicago? Been here ever since. I got started in the refrigeration industry, a company named ISCO first, which was bringing out a small machine to go on top of the old ice box.
I see.
The place of ice. That company failed. Then I went to McClellan Refrigeration also in Chicago, which was meat markets and that sort of thing. Then in 23, I came home and started the same sort of business with the Von Ham Young Company.
I remember Von Ham Young had an extremely large refrigerator. What was the brand they used?
We brought in Frigidaire.
Frigidaire, of course.
In 1923. And developed all this meat market business that you see today. I mean, we were the pioneers in that. Also, we pioneered air conditioning.
Ah, yes.
And all over town.
Uh-huh.
And so then, to get back to the outrigger, I can remember going there at the clubs, when the club was still there near the Royal, going for a lunch or going for dinner. We must have been members during some of that time. Can't fix dates.
Dad and what's his name? Dad's great friend.
Dad Center, you mean?
My brother, Dad Center.
Uh-huh.
And his great friend, what was his name?
Oh, yeah, I can't think.
One of the Cook boys? Ernest Cook? Hedrick Cook?
Cedric, wasn't it?
Cedric Cook. Cedric, yes, Cook. Yeah. You're right.
But Duke Kahanamoku was Dad's great friend.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And a wonderful man.
Yes, he was.
Didn't your brother Dad sort of teach you to swim along with a lot of the other kids around the outrigger?
Yes, he did.
And to surf?
Yes.
He was a great person, you know. He got his name Dad because he befriended all the youngsters.
He was my coach at Punahou.
Yeah.
And he worked me half to death. I remember I used to go up after water polo practice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lie on the bench and I'd almost pass out just before water polo. He had to swim about 50 laps too.
Yeah.
And then he'd have us hold onto the side of the tank and kick.
Really made,
great, great man.
Made tough people out of you.
Now, Peggy, we don't have too much material on Dad Center. And he was a hero for many, many lads growing up at the club and also at Punahou. Since you're the sister, could you give us some background on this wonderful man?
Well, the Seaside Hotel down here on the beach was a place where he used to go out in canoes with people, you remember, take them out in canoes.
Well, that's when the old outrigger was located.
When the old outrigger was located
next,
there.
Next to the seaside.
Seaside. And there was a stream. What was the name of the stream that came down through there?
I don't know the name of it, but it polluted the ocean every time there was a thunderstorm up in the mountains. The mud would come down right next to the club.
Yeah.
I recall there was a lagoon there.
A lagoon is the word.
Right. But there was a stream that went underneath Kalakau Avenue. Remember that?
Yes,
and the outlet was right next to the club. And it would pour dirty mud into the ocean there every time there was a storm. That, of course, was cleared up when the present Olawai Canal was constructed for that purpose, to take all of the floodwater from Mauka and keep them away from the beach.
Yeah. Now, you know, some of the lads used to paddle a small canoe from the lagoon up under the bridge and up to the duck ponds.
Yes.
You'd go by where the Princess Kailani Hotel is now and on up there. Yes. Did you ever do that?
I never paddled up there, but I know the area.
I know the area, too. We used to, at the front of the Moana Hotel, there was a bridge that came out there, do you remember?
Mm-hmm.
And people used to go out there.
Yeah.
Dad was one of them. He used to go out, paddle out.
Uh-huh.
In a canoe.
A pier out into the ocean.
Pier,
wasn't it? Quite long, as I recall.
It was long pier.
The old Moana Pier was called, you know.
Yes,
was,
the Moana Pier, do you remember?
And there were always Hawaiian musicians out at the end there, serenading.
Yeah.
But your brother, Dad, tell how he helps your mother support the family.
Yes.
Where did he work at that time? Did he quit school early?
He went to Davies & Company.
Uh-huh. He left Punahou early, did he?
I don't know whether he completed that or not, but he started at quite a young age, as I understand it, to earn money to help his mother support the large family. You see, there were five children. There was Dad and his brother Ted, and then there was Nadine, there was Jean and Nadine and you,
yeah,
and Helen. There were six children, and their father died at quite a young age, and left Mrs. Center to bring up the family. Dad was a great help to her.
Oh, yes.
He was in the sporting goods department, would you say?
Yes, Davies, he was. Company.
Ah, yes.
Yeah,
right.
Yes.
And he lived over here in their home over here.
He lived on Calico Avenue?
Yes, over here, mother's home.
That's on Calico Avenue, not far from the present club.
Oh, yes.
Where the Dad Center apartment is today.
Yeah.
That was a lovely little bungalow-type house, story and a half. It had quite a big attic. We occupied it for several years later in our married life. And that's we were there when the new club was started next to the Elks Club.
Oh, yeah.
When the club moved.
1964, right?
That was it,
64. Well, that's interesting. Now, getting back to the Outrigger, did Dad ever compete against Duke Anamoku? This would have been around 1911, 1912.
Yes, he did. Do you remember? He used to swim against him.
Down in Honolulu Harbor. They had these regattas.
Oh, yes.
On Kamehameha Day, I think it was.
Yes.
Was the big holiday.
Uh-huh.
The Myrtle and Helani boat clubs were along on the edge of the harbor there. It was a very gala time. There were parties in each of the boat clubs.
We used to go to Wamanalo.
Your brother was a Myrtle.
Yeah.
Red and white colors. They had rowing races and canoe races and swimming races. Dad was a great competitor in the swimming. He went on to accompany Duke to the various Olympics when Duke was at his height, Dad was his trainer at that time.
Great. Now, 1912 would have been the first Olympics.
That's right.
Right.
12 and 16.
16, there wouldn't have been one, I don't think, because of the war.
Yes, that's right.
Was but 20, 20, I know the Duke was in.
Yeah. Oh, I know Dad 14. Went to one in Australia.
Yes.
Was Duke still? I don't remember that.
He went out to Australia.
But he was always coaching swimming and part of the management of the team.
He was a coach at Punahou for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he lost a championship for the whole stretch he was there. He was a fantastic leader. And everyone would work hard for him. He also coached Buster Crabb, I think.
Yes, he did. Buster Crabb.
In around 24, 25. And
yes.
Buster got into the 27 Nationals and then went into the 27 Olympics, I believe, and then was the outstanding American entry in the 32 Olympics.
Yes, that's right.
Well, can you think of anything else that we could put down on Dad Center?
I don't know.
He finally went into golf, didn't he?
Quite a golf enthusiast. He used to play a lot. I never played with Dad. I mean, we were in different groups.
Where did he play? Out at Wailea or over on the other side of the island?
I think it was Oahu Country Club.
At Oahu mostly.
Oahu.
I think,
Oahu Country Club.
Yeah.
Sure.
He was a member there for many years.
Yeah.
He probably had you up there for dinner many times.
Yes.
Yes, that's right.
That's right. Oahu Country Club.
Andy, Atherton Gilman old-time member of the outrigger and also a former student at Punahou, is the only one of All-American fame who was selected by Walter Camp as, you know, the top man, it was the top tackle, I guess, in the nation at the time.
Yes.
Now, he was about your vintage or so. He's a little older, but could you tell me a little about him?
Yeah, he was, I think, 3 years ahead of me at Punahou. Of course, he was a star there. Then he went on to Harvard. And while I was at Cornell, I was at Cornell from 1912 to 16. This probably was about 1914. I went to Cambridge to, Cornell was competing with Harvard.
Oh, yes.
And I went to see the game. Took Bud Carter with me. She was living in Cambridge. And Atherton was on the Harvard team. Atherton and Withington. Paul Withington?
Paul Withington, yes.
Yeah. Honolulu was well represented. And of course, Atherton was a star. I was pulling for Cornell, of course, and I think we beat him that time.
You weren't playing football for Cornell at the time.
Played at Punahou, but at 140 pounds when I got to college, I figured I was a little on the light side. I did turn out for a practice the first year, and I found that the other guys were a lot bigger than I was.
Ah, yes.
And so I stuck to track. I had been track at Punahou also, and I ran 4 years at Cornell. Never a star, but always getting into the meets for a third or a fourth place.
Made your letter anyway, didn't
you? Yeah. So that's my recollection of Atherton. He was a great credit to Hawaii and Hawaiian athletics.
Now, when you were playing football and baseball and running in track, who are you competing against?
All the schools that you have today, like St. Louis, McKinley, and Kamehameha. I guess those three.
I guess they weren't too many.
No, didn't have Iolani. And, St. Louis, Kamehameha, and McKinley. Those were our...
Uh-huh. Did you go out to Cam School track when you had the track?
We'd go back and forth. Different schools.
Alexander Field and then out there.
Yes, and football the same way.
Ah, yes. Yeah. How successful were you in football?
Well, our teams are always up there, and I'm pretty sure we won a championship during my time. I played quarterback and fullback at various times.
All around.
At 140 pounds. And we were just beginning the forward pass. We started it with a shuttle pass, underhand. And I think it was Scotty Schumann that began throwing it like a baseball.
I think it was Atherton Gilman that told me that it was difficult to throw the football in those days because it was a different shape.
They were big.
Round, more like a volleyball.
Well, they were oval, but they were much fatter.
Oh, I see. You couldn't get your hand around.
Much bigger around, that's right. Couldn't get you grasp them.
Yeah. How was your equipment back in those days? They protect you pretty well?
Yes, we had shoulder pads and the shoulder harness and head guards. They were... The helmets were not as rugged as they have today.
Uh-huh.
You get better protection today than we had, but there weren't too many injuries.
Yeah. Now, the Outrigger Club hadn't gone in for sports like that early, I don't think.
No, not at that time.
Right.
I don't know just when the Outrigger... Well, I guess Dad did a lot to start sports at the Outrigger.
I think it was closer to the... early 20s that they started to get going, and had some pretty good teams back then.
Uh-huh.
And
during that period, we were away on the mainland until 1923, so I missed some of that.
Yeah, right. Now, the Hawaii Calls was inaugurated in about the mid-30s. Could you give us a little of background on that? And Peggy, if you can add to it, great.
Well, I recall, of course, Edwards starting it, and Al Perry being the first group to perform as the regulars, you know. And then they'd bring in soloists on various concerts. They started there at the Moana Hotel in the Banyan Court.
Ah, yes.
And that was very famous for quite a long time. Now, I remember one December, Irving Berlin was in town, and they got him as a guest on the show, and they asked me at the same time.
Fantastic.
Because my Melikalikimaka had just been introduced and was going very big as a Hawaiian Christmas song, and his White Christmas was the famous mainland Christmas song. So we were both introduced on the same program, and I remember that very well. I was quite honored to be associated with Irving Berlin.
Now, you had a recording made of Melikalikimaka, didn't you, a record?
Oh, yeah, there have been many.
They didn't put White Christmas on the other side by any chance.
Yes.
That must have helped a little on your sale.
It helped, especially a couple of years ago when Bing Crosby died. Right after that, the next Christmas, there was a big boom in his records.
Oh,
that
yes.
White Christmas record sold very big, and I wrote in on that one.
Wonderful.
On the back side of it.
Great.
Yeah, I was very pleased when Bing recorded it.
Now, talking about Bing, I recall vaguely that he was a member of our old Kamaaina. Well, at the time it wasn't called Kamaaina, but the Beachcombers group.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember Bing joining the group, some of the functions?
No, I guess I wasn't in on that.
Maybe you were away at the time.
Possibly.
Do you know Bing from...
Yes, quite well.
Could you tell us something about this guy?
I got a nice letter from Bing framed under plastic in which he said how much he liked Melikalikimaka and that he was going to record it.
Uh-huh.
And subsequently he did. He sort of made Decca Records. Jack Capp, who was president of Decca Records, made Bing and vice versa. Bing made Decca Records. And Jack Capp became a good friend of ours, he and Frida, his wife. And any song that I would write and send to Jack Capp, he would record in those days.
Wonderful.
On Decca Records. He started the Decca Record Company. And he was an awfully good friend. And most of the artists were like Ray Kinney and people like that of that day were doing the recording. Who was it? Rennie Brooks that did Red O' Pooh.
Yes.
He used to feature that. And Hilo Hattie, the cockeyed mayor of town of Kakai.
Ah, oh, yeah.
So that sort of was an era. The Hawaii Call show, Webb continued right up to the time that he was incapacitated and certainly did a great job. At one time he had over 500 stations taking the program.
I'll be darned.
In the United States, Canada, and even some in Europe.
Great.
And he was sending it to the, what's the name of the program of the U.S. Armed Forces? They have a military program.
I know. I can't think of the name either.
No, but they were putting on Hawaii calls, too. It's
great.
A shame that we don't have it today. It's too bad that it had to wash out.
Yeah, it's strange, you know. The Kodak show started way back about that same time, and it's still going strong.
Mm-hmm.
1928, I think, was the start of the Kodak show, and that started, Louise Akeo and her group started serenading at the Royal Hawaiian Hotel.
Oh, is that right?
In the garden of the Royal Hawaiian, they'd, about sunset time, they'd stroll around with she and her group of singers.
Ah, yes.
And she introduced Haole Hula, which I had written in 1927.
Uh-huh.
And that group, I mean, that was the beginning of the what's now the Kodak group, the Kodak show. And to this day, they sing four or five of my songs on every show.
Wonderful. Now, Fritz Herrmann started that.
Yes,
Fritz did, and it's been a great thing for the company, I think, and for the tourists.
Very popular. I think they've moved from the old location down near the beach up to the Shell.
It's next to the Shell.
Next to the Shell.
A special area there where they have bleachers set up, and they can accommodate about 4,000 people on these bleachers, and three or four shows a week.
And they fill them up, huh?
Yeah.
Isn't that great?
I was at a show just recently. It was there. Well, what anniversary would it be from 1928 to now? About 50th or something.
1920.
Yeah.
That would be 53 years, yeah.
Something like that.
Right.
And you remember we went to lunch afterwards, mm-hmm. celebrating the anniversary. Fritz Herrmann was there. And Mr. Mitchell, who's now the MC of it, he's a Kodak man.
Yeah.
And it's a great program.
Fritz is still a very active Outrigger Canoe Club member. He's always there when I go down. He's a great man. He lives not too far from here.
Yes.
Peggy, how about your recollections of Hawaii calls?
Just that I enjoyed every moment of them.
You used to attend them pretty regularly?
Yes.
It was on, what was that, Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, was Hawaii calls on Sunday?
Saturday. Saturday afternoon, I think.
You know, talking about broadcasting reminds me of something. Someone told me, it was Ron Higgins. Ron was in the third grade when you were in the eighth grade. And he said he was impressed by your putting on a show with wireless equipment. Could you give us a little background on that? Do you remember it?
Yes, I do, very, very plainly. A couple of years, I guess, before the eighth grade, I'd gotten interested in wireless and was reading everything I could get on. We had magazines in those days, technical magazines, and there were half a dozen of us around town that began building little spark sets to communicate with each other. And we'd flash our signals at night and Morse code, you know, and call each other up and talk for a little bit, saying nothing, you know, but just that.
That's contact. Great.
So, what was his first name? Sinclair. Anyway, Archie Sinclair and I. He had started a little ahead of me and was a little more advanced in the technician, but I came along and learned a lot from him and from others. And on the stage in Charter Bishop Hall, we set up two stations, one on either end of the stage. Spark stations, you know, you'd press the key and a spark would jump between two, what they call the spark gap, and that emanated the signal out into the atmosphere.
Oh, yeah.
And so we gave a demonstration. I gave a talk on the subject of wireless and its origin with Marconi and so forth. And then he at one end of the stage and I at the other, we started flashing back and forth messages to each other. And I guess it made an impression.
Now, Ron also had an impression that your equipment was run by water power, a faucet of some sort that ran the dynamo, or not the dynamo, but the generator, or whatever you
used. We did have a water power generator, that's right.
Yeah. He said that was in the...
But I think for that demonstration, we must have had storage batteries.
Oh, I see.
And the batteries had been charged by this little generator. Yeah.
Now, how far could you contact someone back then?
Well, I lived at Kamoku in Baritania, and one of our group was up in Pacific Heights.
Yeah, that's a good distance.
Another was down in the old Oahu Ice Works, which is down Cook Street, you know.
Oh, yes.
And a guy named Sing Chong was out in Kalihi. And Dick Catton was up in Lilo Street near the Arts Academy.
I see.
And all of these, that was about the range, you see. We could, maybe, what, 5 or 6 miles.
You couldn't contact the Matson liners or anything like that, I guess.
Couldn't what?
You couldn't contact the wireless people aboard the Matson liners,
no,
I guess. That'd be a little too far.
Our equipment wasn't strong enough. We could listen in. And then, as the art progressed, I kept building new sets to